Hello. You are listening to the Grieving Parents Sharing Hope podcast. We are here to walk with parents on their unwanted journey of child loss, guiding them to a place of hope, light, and purpose, not in spite of their child's death, but as a way to honor his or her life. And now, here is your host, author, speaker, and bereaved parent, Laura Deal.
Hi, thank you for joining me today. For this episode, you're going to hear Dave and I as guests on the Hope After Child Loss podcast, hosted by Greg Bufkin. Greg's start is a little bit like ours. After Greg and his wife, Kathy, lost their son, Ryan, to suicide in 2015, they found there wasn't much out there for believers who are walking through the darkness of child loss. As God brought them to a place of restoration, hope, and joy, Greg and Kathy found themselves with a passion to help fellow child loss survivors on their journeys. One thing they did was to start a ministry called the Empty Chair Endeavor, along with Greg starting a podcast a couple of years ago. Now, he titled our talk, Rediscovering Hope After Traumatic Loss. So let's go ahead and play it here for you.
Well, Dave and Laura, welcome to our podcast. It's so great to have you guys with us today.
Thank you. We enjoy the invitation. We appreciate it.
Well, the honor is mine. So guys, if you've listened to any of our episodes, you know that at the top, we always take a couple of minutes and ask our guests just to share a little bit about their story, or not so much about their story, but about their life today, I should say. Anything that you want to share related to what you guys are doing right now, your family, whatever that might be. But we'll just take a couple of minutes and then we'll dive into your story.
Okay. Well, I'm usually the spokesperson, so you'll probably hear me talk the most.
Okay. I'm the guy behind the curtain.
So. Yes, he is.
Everybody needs one of those, Dave.
I'll adjust the volume.
He's the button pusher. Yeah.
I'd like to hire him.
So after our daughter passed, like you said, we'll talk about that in a little bit. It was just one of those things where God just started opening doors. I found myself writing a book, starting to speak a little bit. We had a local, just a day for some bereaved parents. It was all moms that came, and they begged us to start a local group for bereaved parents. And it was just one of those things that God just grew, and we realized that Dave had lost his job through corporate downsizing after how many years?
27 years at that place, but about 40 years in IT.
Wow.
Yeah. And so nothing was coming up. I mean, he was putting things out across the nation and just doors were not opening. And we just really started feeling like the Lord leading us, that he was asking us to minister to bereaved parents on a full-time basis. And so as I was getting more invitations to speak, we were coming back from North Dakota, and I just felt like maybe we should get just a little motorhome, go out 2 or 3 weeks at a time and then come back home. But I didn't want it to feel like I was camping. I mean, it had to be comfortable. And so we spent 2 years literally just looking for something that would be right for us,
right,
and praying about the timing and the finances. And then all of a sudden I found myself writing in my journal with the Lord one day that we were supposed to sell our house to our oldest son who lived with us at the time and get something and do this full time and move into the motorhome and travel the nation doing what we do. And it was like, well, how do I tell Dave this? And so I just took my journal up and read it to him. And
I was upstairs in our bedroom.
Really?
Just contemplating the same thing with the Lord.
Really? Wow.
So we were getting the same message, and we had been looking for 2 years, and within 10 days, we had a full-size, perfect for us motorhome.
No kidding.
Yeah.
God's good at that, isn't he?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. And so we had started, our church had asked us to do a little, one of those home groups in our home for bereaved parents. We have several campuses. And so just coming up with a name, this was like years before we traveled, just praying about a name. What are we going to call this little home group? And I just felt like the Lord gave me the name GPS Hope, standing for Grieving Parents Sharing Hope. And so that was just the name of our little life group in our living, in our family room. We had one other couple that joined us and had absolutely no idea that that was going to be the name of what God was going to turn into a national and international ministry. So that was kind of how things got started.
I love the name.
Yeah, there's, I mean, just navigating and the whole thing.
Yeah, yep. And there's not, at least I guess when we were there in that early season of grief, there wasn't a lot out there. And I suspect that you guys found something very similar.
Exactly. It's, I mean, there's stuff out there, but there's very little for believers who are struggling with their faith.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And and that's really where we just really felt drawn to, was to walk with other parents who have just had their faith shattered. We thought we knew who God was, and it's like we're starting all over again.
Yeah, I totally understand that, and it seems to be almost universal. And talking with other Christian parents who have lost a child, it seems like we all go through this period of feeling like, you know, everything that I knew or that I thought I knew has now been brought into question. And it leaves you feeling, it's almost hard to describe, isn't it?
It is. And I know most parents, I would say, that we have found over the years are very angry at God, because it's like, I did everything right. I did everything I was supposed to. Why did you take my child? I mean, that's the, you know, how we think and how we feel. Now, Dave and I, we didn't actually experience the anger with God. We had been through some other very serious things with our family before this, nothing like the death of our daughter, but we had walked enough deep, dark paths that we knew God was our way through. Not to get angry, but to somehow trust Him and hang on to Him, you know, with everything we had. But I will say, we both struggled with prayer. It's, you know, almost like, what's the point of praying if God's going to do what He wants to do? Or, you know, if it's, you know, praying protection for your children or healing or whatever. That was a struggle that I actually had for years. Hard to admit.
Interesting, but you should say that, because I struggled with that as well. Because for years, you know, when Ryan was growing up and going through some challenges, shall we say, in his teen years particularly, we prayed for protection over Ryan for a long time. And when he took his own life, it felt pointless after that to ask God for protection, because it just seemed like, what's the point?
I had several years into this, because I get so many emails and so many parents asking about this. And so there are a lot of times it was like, I knew what I believed. I knew what was in my heart, or I knew what I was struggling with, but to be able to put words to it, to share with other parents, that was one of the things I really started asking God about. And something that He showed me was, when you have a king over a kingdom, you have the subjects or the peasants, whatever you want to call them, will come and put petitions before the king. And the king will look at the entire kingdom and see how it affects the entire kingdom. Now, that one coming to the king isn't going to see the view of the entire kingdom. They're just going to see their own little view of their own kingdom.
Exactly.
But the king has to make his decisions based on the entire kingdom. And it may not be the decision we wanted, but we have to trust the king that he's seeing what we don't see, and he knows what we don't know. And that if I don't continue to bring my petitions to him beyond this painful thing, then there's no obligation for him to answer any of my prayers if I don't continue to bring them to him. And so, to broaden my perspective that way, is that he's going to answer my prayers based on what he sees for eternity and his kingdom, not mine.
Right. That's a great analogy.
It doesn't take away the pain, but for me, it helped me understand. It's like, okay, then I'll keep praying. I'll keep coming to God with requests and questions and things like that, and just trust him to the best that I can.
Right. Because I think that, you know, when we are traumatized by something so painful and we're suffering with the pain of that and the bewilderment of that loss, I think it blocks our ability to really connect what we know about God and what our experience is with him with what we're feeling at the present time, because it feels like we're disconnected, and it just feels like, it's never going to get any better. But you've experienced, as well as we have, how God can take something so incredibly tragic and horrible and bring something beautiful out of those broken pieces.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that I'm okay with Becca being gone, or, you know, it's would I rather have Becca here? Absolutely.
Well, of course.
But I don't have that choice.
Right.
And so to find out how to move forward and to live, one of the things that I just thought of to share here is it okay to share Becca's story here real quick?
Yeah, I was hoping that we would dive into that at some point. So yes, absolutely.
Okay, because I want to give some background to what I was going to share.
Right.
When Becca was three, she was diagnosed with cancer. She had bone cancer, and she had her little left leg amputated at 3 years old and went through 9 months of chemo. And then it was years later, they found out one of the chemo drugs they were giving children at the time in the dosage was causing long-term effects of heart damage. And so she was tested, and she had moderate heart damage. When she got married and was pregnant, it escalated the heart issues. And there's a big, long story people can, it's not big and long on the website, but there's more than what I'm going to share here. But bottom line, she ended up needing a heart transplant years later. At 28, she went through open heart surgery, got what's called a VAD. It was a pump that ran the left side of her heart. A lot of things going on with that. She ended up with three med flight helicopter rides, about a dozen ambulance rides. Eventually, she didn't make it. Her heart gave out. And that was October 12th of 2011. So what I was going to share is having a front row seat to our daughter with an amputation, we actually have her first little itty bitty prosthetic leg. And you know, you save things from your kids. What do you do with your child's first leg?
That's not something everybody has to contend with.
No. And so when we started, you know, when the Lord started us in this ministry to other bereaved parents and thinking about how losing your child is like having an amputation, it's a part of your very being has been cut off from you, and you have to figure out how to live with that piece of you missing. And so to actually have this visual of this little tiny three-year-old's leg, first prosthetic leg, to talk about watching her live with an amputation, watching her live every single day with things that she had to face that you don't think about having to face unless you've had an amputation. And it's the same with us as parents. You know, things that we face every single day that you don't even think about unless you have faced that amputation of your child from you.
Yeah, that is a great analogy. I can remember early on a physician friend of mine sharing that exact same analogy. And it does so accurately represent what, you know, what we live through. You guys started experiencing grief when she was 3 years old.
Yes.
Grieving the fact that she had bone cancer, which is just...
One of those prayer things, you
yeah.
know, back then, you know, churches fasting and praying for and all that stuff.
Right.
And I just had this presumptuous faith that the more people I told God was going to heal her, the more he would almost be obligated to heal her because of my faith.
Right.
And then when she wasn't healed and she had her leg amputated, went through all that chemo, it's like, okay, God, I need to figure out this faith stuff. What is this all about?
Yeah. Where the rubber meets the road. I think a lot of us find that, you know, we have our faith so often before we encounter something so life-changing. We have this mental understanding of faith and this mental understanding of who God is and what the Christian life really means. But when that something, that life-altering happens, I think that's when we really begin to discover who God is and how good God is, even when to us it doesn't make sense in those first weeks, months, and maybe even a year or so. That's when we discover the foundation of our faith and if it really holds when we hit something so incredibly unspeakable.
Right, because we think we've built our life on the rock until something like that happens, and then we find out maybe I really was building it on the sand, who I thought God was, and now I can really experience the fullness of his faithfulness in getting me through this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a miracle. To me, that's a miracle.
It is.
To come out on the other side of this kind of suffocating darkness that you can't even describe, to come out on the other side with light and hope and life and purpose, that's a miracle to me.
It is. There's no doubt about that. What would you say to that, Dave?
Well, I know for me, my prayer initially, for me personally, was, God, don't let this pain go to waste. I would absolutely have hate for this type of pain to just be wasted in my life getting worse and worse and worse, instead of opening up the possibility of what God can do through it. And one of the things that I know for me, growing up in the Christian world, using the authority of Christ that we have, often we think of that as using Christ's authority in our life to avoid suffering, when in reality, it's about walking through that suffering to the other side.
And what we do with it.
Right. And honestly, Hebrews 11, the faith chapter that we all talk about, and all the faith heroes, that's the kind of faith we always wanted to build in ourselves. Well, after Becca's death, all of a sudden, the back half of that chapter is what came to life to me, where God says, here's all the people of faith that never received that promise here on this side of heaven, but they've received it now. And it just changed my whole perspective of faith. It's not about what we get now. It's about what all of us will have, whether we receive it in this lifetime or not. It's coming. And our kids are experiencing it now.
Yeah. And what Dave is talking about is found in a relationship, a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. That's the foundation. You know, guys, there are probably people listening today that may be in a very fresh season of grief, and they're wondering how they're going to survive it. And they're wondering, is it always going to hurt this badly? And they're also wondering, am I going crazy? I would like for you guys, either or both of you, to speak a little about your experience as it involves, as we know, the not only the emotional train wreck that it leaves us, but also the physical and the mental impact as well. And we've kind of touched on the spiritual aspect of it, but I think what escapes a lot of people that have never been where we are is what it does to us physically and mentally. Can you guys talk about that?
Yeah, I'll share a few things and then I'm going to throw it Dave's way. For me, kind of the, you know, thinking like I'm going crazy. Is this early Alzheimer's? I can't hold on to any thought. I forget things. I mean, and it's not like that forgetfulness, you know, like you walk in a room and you forget what you went in there for. I mean, it's like there is nothing there to draw from. It's scary. I remember one time going to a store and I came back out of the store wandering the parking lot crying. I didn't even remember driving there, much less which door I parked by to go in to be able to find my car. And there's nothing there to pull from. It's beyond just a forgetfulness, and it's scary. But you don't have early Alzheimer's. It's a trauma. You are going through a trauma. And most experts will say child loss is a trauma. And most parents have PTSD on top of that trauma.
Absolutely.
And anything under 5 years for child loss is considered fresh grief. So, you know, not to put yourself on a timeline, it's not that 1 year thing. It's not for me. The second year was harder than the first year in some ways. And it may sound, how can this possibly get harder? I can't do this. I'll explain why it was for me. For the first year, you know, you're just in that fog, that disbelief, that confusion. And so when I hit that second year, I thought, okay, I've been through all the dates and everything already. This is going to get better. And at that point, the fog started lifting and the reality of the loss started setting in. And so it made things harder for me the second year. Now, I found out that's typical. I don't want to scare anybody. You will get through it. It will get better. You have to go through it. There's no way around it. I want to encourage you, continue to listen to Greg's podcast. Walk with others who are ahead of you on this walk that can keep encouraging you and giving you hope. And take it just one day. I say 1 minute, one breath at a time. I remember sitting in my living room chair and I realized I was forgetting to breathe. I had to make myself take a breath, but you will get through it. As far as physically, I just let myself go. You don't care. you don't care whether you're here or not. I know from a lot of parents who lost their children during COVID or right before COVID, it was like, I don't care if I get COVID. I don't want to be here anymore. It's not that we're suicidal. We just don't want to be here. Even now, Becca's the oldest of five. So we have four other children. Becca's daughter, who had just turned 9, and another granddaughter. You know, Dave and I had an international children's ministry. Dave and I, a good marriage. All these reasons in my head to live, but my heart did not want to be there. My heart wanted to go with Becca. And God showed Dave something about that.
Yeah, those are good words, Laura.
Yeah, she was just pondering that. Why do I want to go be with Becca so bad? And I just thought of the scripture of the good shepherd leaving the 99 for the one that's lost. And that's just a natural thing for us to want to go get the one that's lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had a friend almost a year to the day when Becca died. And I told her, she was a pastor's wife, and Dave and I are also both ordained ministers. And I was very honest with her. I said, I feel horrible that I'm more excited to get to heaven to see Becca than I am Jesus.
And I get that.
And she said, but Laura, you've made a deposit there. And it was shortly after that, that the Lord, reading the word, and I know some people can't, you know, they struggle with reading the Bible, and that's okay. God understands that, I believe. But I was in the word and got to that scripture in Matthew where Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be mm-hmm. also. And I felt like that was the Lord saying, it's okay that your heart is here with your daughter and with me. And it took several years for me to feel like I was just as excited to see Jesus because he's the one that made it possible. But I that tangible relationship with my daughter and having it severed, it took many, many years before I felt differently.
I think it brings Christ joy to think of that day of reunion.
Yeah.
When we're going to be reunited with our loved ones and with our kids, that I could see him even taking a step back and letting us embrace and him just glowing on his face of, this is exactly what I wanted. That's part of what he died for.
Yeah, guys, those are such good words. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm sure right now that's giving permission to people to relax in that. And just to be able to let go and not struggle with that, with those thoughts and feeling guilty about it potentially. Because I think sometimes when we have thoughts like that, as Christians, it can leave us feeling a little guilty, and the enemy would love to use that against us.
Oh my goodness.
We
are such vulnerable targets for the enemy.
Especially when we've been weakened by something like that.
Yes. Right.
Laura, you touched on something a few minutes ago that I want us to explore a little bit. And that is, I think, something that really goes missed by those on the outside looking in. And that is that whole concept of after we lose a child, we're left facing an entire year of firsts. And for those of you who are listening who don't know what we're talking about, it's the first birthday, the first Christmas, the first Thanksgiving. The list goes on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Things that we shared with our child, things that were important, things that we celebrated together, that we love doing together. That's one of those things that you suddenly find yourself realizing after your child dies is that, oh my gosh, how are we possibly going to go through Christmas? What are we going to do when their birthday comes? You know, those are things that we just absolutely could not have been prepared for.
Right.
How did you guys navigate that many firsts? What did you do?
One thing the Lord very graciously spoke to me, and I've heard it from others since then, but this was something the Lord shared with me directly, was because one of the things I would almost like get into this anxiety panic where I couldn't breathe when I started thinking of being here 1 year, 2 year, 5 years, 10 years without Becca. We're coming up on 13 years for her now. I couldn't breathe even just thinking about that's not possible. I can't do this kind of a thing. And what the Lord so graciously spoke to me one time is that, Laura, you're not getting further away from her. Every day you're getting closer and closer to her.
Mm-hmm.
To seeing her again. And that has, you know, a lot of things that I have discovered are asking God to help us change our perspective on how we see it. And so instead of thinking about, and I'll tell you, one of the worst things and all knowing when this is going to come out is going to be towards the end of the year, heading into a new year without your child.
I
can't even describe to you what it's like knowing you're going into a year without your child. It's just, it feels like you're leaving them behind forever. You're not ready for that. It just, you can't put it into words.
Absolutely true.
And I think, you know, that whole year of firsts, a lot of that is looking back at the last. It's like, okay, this is the first Christmas. I had no idea that last year was going to be the last Christmas I had. And then when you get up to the anniversary date, you start thinking about the last conversation I had a year ago, the last time we got to hug, the last, you know, and I'm sorry for those who are listening. This is probably bringing some tears, but I want to remind you again, you will also have some firsts. When you get to see your child again, you're going to have that first hug. You're going to have that first laugh. You're going to have all those things are going to be in reverse. You're going to have it all again. It's like it's on pause, and it doesn't take away the pain, but it gives you hope for the future in the midst of that pain. We can have peace and pain at the same time, because pain is in our soul and peace is in our spirit. Peace is a fruit of the spirit. And so it is possible to have excruciating pain while at the same time having peace and a hope in the future that we still have with our child, and that we are, each one of us are getting closer and closer to our child.
Yeah, very true. I think it's one of those things where the anticipation of a lot of those firsts is almost worse than the event itself or the day itself. Because you wonder if you're going to be able to survive it.
Yes.
Dave, you were going to say something.
I was going to say the word that came to my mind was grace, because especially on the first ones, and actually all anniversaries from now until we meet again, it's so important to have grace, not only for yourself, but for one another, because we all grieve so differently. When Becca's birthday comes up, we may want to celebrate that together. Some may just not feel like they can. I think over the years, we've always tried to celebrate Becca's birthday because that was an important and fun day for all of us. Mm-hmm. And Rebecca was very much into pomp and circumstances.
She had the gift of hospitality and did everything big. You ask her to throw a party and you're going to get a party. So I can't wait to see what my mansion is going to look like when I get there.
Well, that's great that you guys have chosen to carry on that tradition. I love it.
Anniversary of her passing is a little bit different.
Of course.
That's something that sometimes our family members just kind of want to ignore. They don't want to establish that as a big day every year. And I get that. There's also some that want to hold it solemn and in remembrance. And it can change from year to year.
And when he says family members, a lot of it is our other kids. So, and some of them, it's like you want to be alone on that day. Sometimes you want to be with someone on that day. And like Dave was starting to say, it's different. It's not like every year is the same either.
Right.
And so it's really important for people to do what you need to do. And like Dave said, give grace to the rest of your family to do what they need to do.
Yeah. Get angry while you're just forgetting all about her. That's not, they can't.
Yeah. I think it's just, as you said, we all grieve in our different ways, and there's no right or wrong way to do so. There are certainly healthy versus unhealthy ways, but no right or wrong. And as you guys pointed out, it varies from person to person. And I think it's important because of that, especially with husbands and wives, to have a conversation about that before that day or whatever that is that's in question, to have a conversation about it so you can hear what the other is thinking and how they're feeling, so that you can arrive at something that works for both of you, so that the way that you grieve is honored and the way that he grieves or she grieves is honored, because we all need to do it the way that works best and is healthiest for us. But that does bring up a topic that I wanted us to talk about, because husbands and wives grieve differently, because men and women grieve differently. You know, they're obviously a lot of similarities, but because we grieve differently, can you guys talk a little about how you grieve together while at the same time giving each other the freedom and the grace to grieve as individuals? What did that look like for you all?
Well, I'll say Dave is better at that than I am. One thing, we actually do sessions on, you know, marriage and grief. And one of the things that we kind of laugh about is how we know, we hear, we know that we all grieve differently. There's no wrong way to grieve until my spouse is doing it wrong.
Yeah, there is.
You're
that.
Doing it wrong, though. because we do it so differently. As a whole, we women tend to wear our grief on our sleeve.
You do.
You know, and we have to, we have, you know, we immerse ourselves in our children's things. We smell their clothes. We look at their pictures. We, you know, we go to the cemetery constantly, or, you know, those kinds of things. And the husband has a very different reaction because they're very protective.
Yes.
You know, they want to help us.
That's one thing. Initially, when Becca passed, I came with the boys to the hospital after Laura and our other daughter were already up there because they got the call that she had coded and they were trying to get her back. So when we came, we didn't know whether she was dead or alive or what. But I come around the corner and my youngest daughter, who was in her 20s then, was outside of Becca's hospital door, and I just said, "Did she make it?" And I just fell into my arms, crying, and my boys surrounded me, crying. And my oldest daughter is like 5 feet away, is her door, and she's on the other side. My thought wasn't all about my loss of losing my oldest daughter. My immediate thought was, "God help my kids here." You know, the pain they're dealing with. Where's my wife and the pain she must be dealing with? My son-in-law. I just immediately was in this protective mode because that's, as men and fathers, that's natural for us to be protective.
Yeah.
In one ways, we can tend to do that, especially is when we come home and we see our wife a mess on the floor bawling and they've got the pictures out. And I've heard stories of a lot of men that have done this, just kind of yelling at their wives, you know, "Why are you torturing yourself like that? Stop doing that to yourself." And I like to talk to women about that it's not coming from a mean spirit from their husband. They're not being gentle, which they should be.
Right.
And they're not showing grace, which they should be. But it's coming from a heart of protection. I don't want you to be like this. I want you to grieve, but don't hurt yourself this way. And
yeah,
it's important to see the heart of where that reaction's coming from.
And for a woman, it's like as a whole, and sometimes it's reversed, but as a whole, for a woman, in order for us to process this, we have to immerse ourselves in it. We have to get our head and our heart to reconcile. And the way we do that is by immersing ourselves in our child. And for a man as a whole, all of that stuff is a distraction to them. They have to process it totally different.
Yeah.
Dave talks about like the boxes, the Becca box.
I don't know if you've heard of Mark Gunger had a series on marital series.
Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage or something like that.
Right. And one of it was The Tale of Two Brains. And he goes over the differences between men's brains and women's brains, generically speaking,
sure.
Obviously.
Sure.
With a lot of humor.
But he described men's brains as a bunch of little boxes and women's brains as a ball of wire. Every thought is connected to another thought, and they literally cannot
stop thinking.
Yes.
It's impossible. Where they have tested, I think it was the University of Pennsylvania, men can literally stop brain activity in their thinking.
They actually have a nothing box. When they say they're thinking about nothing, they really are. We get so, how can you be thinking about nothing? You have to be thinking about something. It's been proven men have a nothing box.
So we do tend to compartmentalize things. And some women can do this and some men can't. But in general, we do tend to compartmentalize better.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we pull out one box, discuss what's only in that box, and then we put it back in order not to disturb any other box.
Right.
You know, and that's why we can be so single-minded on something and not know what else is going on around us. And the thing is, my Becca box fell out and crashed into a million pieces, and not just pieces, but dust particles.
Sure.
And as men, we like, okay, I got to get a grief box. I want to sweep all that up, put it away, and compartmentalize my grief box in a second separate area, and I'll deal with it when I want to deal with it, which honestly, I don't ever want to deal with it. You know?
Yeah.
And What we don't realize is we go and pull out our work box or our wife box or whatever. And when we pull it out, all of a sudden there's a piece of shattered Becca in that box that we weren't expecting.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden it's there.
Yeah.
You just can't get rid of it and compartmentalize it quite that way.
Yeah, that's some really good perspective from both of you guys. And I think that in a good marriage, when there's a good solid foundation, with God's help, we can learn from each other in that. And maybe we can learn as men to become a little more like our wives, and wives can become a little bit more, you know, like us. And, you know, never do we shift completely. But I think we can, with his help, we can learn to appreciate how each other processes through that.
Right.
And it, you know, I think something that people fear, husbands and wives, I'm referring to, when they lose a child, they've heard the awful statistics about divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, those statistics are not well-founded. And that statistic is somewhere around 80 to 90% of marriages after the death of a child end in divorce. That has been totally debunked. There
right.
are a number of studies out there now, as you guys well know, that show that the parents who have lost a child have a divorce rate ranging from about 12 to 16%, which is significantly lower than the divorce rate and the general population, which is including the, you know, the Christian community, somewhere in the mid to upper 40s. So I think that shows that when there's a good solid foundation there in that marriage, as we walk through a shared trauma,
yes.
it brings us closer together if we will lean into the Lord with that and lean into each other and support each other.
Yeah. We had, when Becca went through her cancer at 3, we had a pastor that had us over for dinner, him and his wife. And that was one of the things that he wanted to talk to us about, is when a family goes through a trauma, that the mom and the dad can turn against each other and blame each other. And unfortunately, we saw that these children up at, she was at Madison University Hospital, and there were parents getting divorced while their children were going through liver transplants and things. And it was like, how does that child not feel like it's, you could tell that child that's not your fault that your parents got divorced, but how does that child believe it? And so that was one of the things that way back then he wanted to stress to us. You can either turn against each other or you can turn towards each other. And so, you know, over the years, that's the choice we've made.
And it is a choice. It is a choice.
Yes, yes.
I'd like to add one thing. I think it's good for men to understand, and this understanding helped me a lot too. As painful as it is to lose a child as a father, mom has such a unique relationship with every one of their kids.
Yes,
that
indeed.
Even us fathers can't have. It's impossible. They were carrying, not we think of them as carrying our child for 9 months in physical terms. But they also carried another human being's soul and spirit in them.
Yes.
And when they were born, that physical connection was cut off, but the soul and spirit connection wasn't. And I think at the time of death, there's a severing there that they feel even deeper than we feel, that we can't fully comprehend. But if we can recognize that, it'll help us to have a little more grace for our wife and what.
And I know when God first showed me that, it was like, okay, Lord, can you show me some scriptures to back that up? Because I felt like that's what the Lord was speaking to me, is just that when I realized one day, very specifically, I wasn't just carrying her body. I actually had the very soul and spirit of a human being inside me. And that connection, and I think that's why a lot of times, not all the time, but moms have a sense that something's going on with their child. Because of that, there's a connection there that goes beyond the physical. And so the Lord, you know, Samson was one of them. Because the mom was not allowed, she had to do a Nazarite vow because she was carrying Samson. Another one was Mary and Elizabeth. When they met John and Jesus, they leapt. I mean, Jesus leapt in Mary's womb. So John did. Yeah. So, I mean, there's scriptural basis for that as well.
Yeah. I think one of the most unique things in all of God's creation is a mom's heart. You know, as you said, Dave, it's a connection. It's a DNA connection that we as guys don't have like they do. And I totally agree with everything that both of you guys said. And I think it's so important that you shared, because sometimes it is really hard to understand where the other is coming from. While we know there's no right or wrong way to grieve, sometimes it's, well, yep, you know, you're not grieving like I am, so you're not doing
you
it.
You won't talk about it. You need to talk about it. And that's not how men do it.
And the same can be said for, you know, from a man's perspective.
But we do need to talk about it. Women need to talk about it. And so there need to be opportunities, like you said earlier. You know, we need to have grace, and we need to figure out how to do it in a way where both of our needs are being met.
Yeah.
In that grieving process.
Yeah, and there is some data out there as well that that talks about that how we men automatically go into protective mode when something like this happens, you know, to protect our wife, other children. And because of that, so often I think men delay their grief because they don't want to deal with it. They don't have time to deal with it. We don't have the, we don't feel like we've got the capability to deal with it. So we just rather not deal with it. And so we immerse ourselves in work, we get lost in something else and put it in that box that Dave referred to. Eventually, however, there's data out there to show that with quite a number of men who have lost a child, the impact doesn't start showing up until about 8 years after the loss.
And it can be very physical,
too. Yeah, very physical and much more pronounced than had it been dealt with earlier, and we were engaging in those conversations, allowing other people to enter into that grief with us. And that sometimes that may need to be a professional counselor. It may be our pastor. It may be a small group that we're a part of, but it needs to be somebody that we trust that we can share it with. Guys, I want to take the last few minutes and have you all talk about GPSO. How long after you guys lost Rebecca was it that you started this ministry?
Well, Becca died October 12, 2011, and we started that group in our family room in 2014.
Okay.
So we just in August had a big 10-year celebration, had a weekend and had Perivers. We call us Perivers. That was one thing that really bothered me. We know what an orphan is. We know what a widow is. Lord, why isn't there, there's no word that describes our pain, but why isn't there a word that just collectively like brings us together? And as I was just taking that to the Lord, I'm a word person, English person, and I just started putting things together and I discovered the word just bereaver. You use the PA for a parent. The root word of bereave is the word reave. And that means a robbing, being torn, being seized, being taken violently. And that's exactly how I felt.
Wow.
I was bereaved. It was, you know, she was ripped and torn from me. And so if you put the PA, a parent, ahead of the root word reave, you have a parent who's had our child torn from us, taken from us. And so I call us bereavers. P-A-R-E-A-V-O-R, Perivor. And so we had a bunch of Perivors come up from literally around the nation here in Wisconsin. And then we had a dinner celebration of hope for our 10-year celebration.
Well, that is really cool. I've learned a new word today. Thank you for sharing that. I'll figure out.
It resonates with a lot of people. If it doesn't, that's okay.
Yeah. I'll figure out a way to include that in your episode description as well. I'd like that because you're right. Prior to Perivor, there was no box to put bereaved parents in.
It's just something that just we can relate to with each other. It's like, oh, you're a Perivor. Okay, I relate to that.
Yeah,
I get you.
I get you. You're one of us. I mean, it just,
absolutely.
It's kind of like when you meet a Christian and it's like that, you're part of the family. You don't even have to know them. You just know they're part of the family. And when you meet someone who's lost a child, there's just this instant connection.
It is amazing, is it not?
Yes.
Yeah, it's happened to us so many times. It continues to, it's a lifetime continuation.
Yes.
Yeah. You guys have a podcast. And the GPS Hope Podcast, right?
Well, we actually use the full name. It's Grieving Parents Sharing Hope.
Okay.
It's the name of the podcast. It's been going for five years.
Yeah, 2019.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now you've been doing that on a weekly basis for pretty much that entire length of time, right? And is that platform, Laura, because I know that it's you who does it. Dave is your tech guy who does all your editing and all. That's why I would like to hire him so that he can do mine. So is it that you do something similar to what we do? You have parents who come and share their story?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. Yeah. Some of it is I will just talk about something that the Lord has on my heart, different topics. And sometimes I will have a guest on that has lost a child.
Yeah. Well, if you're listening today, I would strongly urge you to check out Laura's podcast. Again, it's called Grieving Parents Sharing Hope Podcast. And I know it's found on all of the major podcast platforms. So do check that out.
One of the things I'll just mention, one of the things that we do on the podcast is we have a birthday segment. And we, birthdays that are submitted to us, you can go to gpshope.org/birthdays and just fill out the information there. And then the week of your child's birthday, we announce their birthday and their forever age so that a parent can hear their child's name and have it recognized as my child's life is still important.
Oh, what a thoughtful thing to do. Please take advantage of that if you're listening.
We just recently switched to every other week.
Right. Laura was telling me about that earlier.
Yeah. Just have some other obligations going on right now for a season. So doing it every other week for right now.
And that's okay. People, when they discover your podcast and it touches them, they'll work with you on the how often it's
There's a
it's
lot
published.
Of archives. So
Yeah. I'm sure over 5 years there are.
Yeah.
I also want to remind our listeners that Laura is a gifted author. She has, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Laura, 8 books to your credit.
Well, recently,
21.
Yeah, technically 21 published
close.
Books right now. Well, the way that happened was I did put together, because I've been doing this for so long and I have so much that I've written, I send out a weekly word of hope and other things, that I put together a daily reflection book.
Okay.
So it's Reflections of Hope, Daily Readings for Bereaved Parents, and it's a whole year. It's actually 366 days. I even got Leap Day in there. And so what we did was then we took that book and we broke it into individual months so that if someone, you know, like for us, October is a really rough month and I just need something to help get me through October, then you can just get the Reflections of Hope month of October.
Yeah.
And so that made 12 published books right there.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, you know, a couple of them that caught my attention as I looked, you know, through your website was one is entitled Come Grieve Through Our Eyes, and the other is When Tragedy Strikes. You know, those just stood out to me. And I think the titles imply at least what you can expect to find in those books. There's not an awful lot of resources out there. So I would invite you to check out these two books. I'll have the titles in the episode description, but again, they're one is called Come Grieve Through Our Eyes, and the other, When Grief Strikes.
When
Tragedy Strikes. Yep. You know, I'm sure that book can, like the others, can be found on any of the major booksellers' websites. Right. So take advantage.
Can I just mention the Come Grieve Through Our Eyes? I actually wrote for people to understand us, but we have so many parents that get that book, and they're so thankful because, like we talked about at the beginning, I'm not going crazy because it takes, you know, through all these parents, what they have to say about all these different topics that we now deal with.
Right.
And so it's been a real comforting book for bereavers because it validates so much of what they're going through.
Yeah.
And then they can give it to their family member or friends and say, hey, here, read this, then come talk to me about why I'm still grieving.
Yeah, that's a great point. That is a very good point, Dave. Well, Dave and Laura, it has been such an honor to have you guys on my podcast today to share your story about your sweet daughter, Rebecca, and to let our listeners get a glimpse into the lives of people who have who are walking a grief journey, but who have also rediscovered hope and joy and meaning and purpose in life again, as God has been reconnecting all of those broken pieces.
I don't know if you can tell, but we really felt a kindred spirit with Greg. If you want to find out more about him or listen to more of his podcasts, I will put a link to his website in the show notes, but the website is www.emptychairendeavor.com. Now, I still have to set up a time for him to be on the Grieving Parents Sharing Hope podcast here, but hopefully that won't be too far away. If you're like I was, you are struggling with the thought of going into a new year without your child. I remember how devastating it felt, like I really was leaving Becca behind, and it felt horrible. I'm going to put a couple of links in the show notes to some of my past podcast episodes where I specifically talk about this. Now, you can also go to gpshope.org and scroll down to the bottom for the search bar and type in New Year, and that will take you to some things as well, including the podcasts I'm going to put links to in the show notes. Now, there are a couple of tools I want to remind you about. One is the Reflections of Hope book, which is a year of daily readings for bereaved parents. Now, it's not a book that you have to keep up on reading every single day. If you miss a few days or even weeks, it doesn't matter. When you're ready, just pick the book back up and read that day's entry for some hope and some strength. Like I said, it's a tool, and it's there for you when you need it. Now, we also divided this yearly book into 12 monthly books if you just want a specific month or two. We all know we have months that are more difficult than others, and so you can get just that month if you want. Go to gpshope.org/reflections for more information or to order the book, and I will also put a link to that in the show notes. Now, the last thing I want to talk to you about is a tool that many of you probably don't know about, but we have 3 self-study guidance courses based on my multiple award-winning book, When Tragedy Strikes, Rebuilding Your Life with Hope and Healing After the Death of Your Child. Every single session in these, I talk to you on a video and I give you something to do that will kind of help you a little bit with what I just talked about, kind of help you move forward. Now, the 3 courses are How Do I Even Start to Rebuild My Life? One is called Working Through the Darkness, and the other one is called Looking Toward My Future. Now, I'm not going to share anything more about them right now, but if you want to take a look at them, you can go to gpshope.org/WTS course. That stands for When Tragedy Strikes, and I will also put a link to that in the show notes. So let's go ahead and go on to the birthdays. Now, these are from December 27th through January 11th. Aria Arona was born on December 31st and is forever 15. Madison Clark was born on January 2nd and is forever 20. Luke Hebenstreit was born on January 4th and is forever 23. Ryan Hines was born on January 7th and is forever 27. As always, we celebrate the day these children came into the world. We know it will always be a special and important day. If you would like to have your child's birthday announced on the podcast, I would love to be able to do that for you. Just go to gpshope.org/birthdays. And when it's the podcast episode that's the closest to your child's birthday, the week of that, right now I'm doing every other week, we will announce your child's birthday. And Dave will send you an email to remind you to listen to make sure that you don't miss it. I really pray that this podcast episode was a blessing to you in some way. It may feel very dark and hopeless right now, but there are so many of us who thought the exact same thing, and we are now living lives of meaning and purpose again. And that's not in spite of our child's death, but because of his or her life, and because of continuing to hold on to God until we begin to see light in our place of darkness. So as always, I want to remind you to hold on. Pain eases. There is hope.